So our gospel reading this morning comes to us from Matthew's gospel, chapter 16, verses 21 through 28. In this passage, Jesus has death on the brain, and he tells his disciples that he's got to die, which doesn't make them very happy, and it causes a bit of conflict in the ranks, and it moves Jesus to some very difficult but profound teachings. So let's listen together for God's word, where we read, "From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he had to go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders, the chief priests, and legal experts, and that he had to be killed and raised on the third day. Well, then Peter took hold of Jesus and, scolding him, began to correct him. 'God forbid, Lord, this won't happen to you.' But he turned to Peter and said, 'Get behind me, Satan. You are a stone that could make me stumble, for you are not thinking God's thoughts, but human thoughts.' Then Jesus said to his disciples, 'All who want to come after me must say no to themselves, take up their cross and follow me. All who want to save their lives will lose them, but all who lose their lives because of me will find them. Why would people gain the whole world but lose their lives? What will people give in exchange for their lives? For the human one is about to come with the majesty of his Father with his angels, and then he will repay each one for what the person has done. I assure you that some standing here today won't die before they see the human one coming in his kingdom." May God bless the reading and hearing of this, God's holy word. Dear ones, let's be together in prayer. God, it's easy to be closed to your word, but open us. Open us in this place of safety, in this place of love and of peace and of grace. Open us to easy things and hard things. And change us. Amen. Some of you may know what that's from, right? The three-finger salute from The Hunger Games. Right? You know The Hunger Games? The Hunger Games is a series of books and movies about a dystopian world where teenagers, children, are forced into an arena to fight to the death as a penance for the district's uprising against the capital sometime in the past. There are 12 districts and one capital, so each district sends two tributes for a total of 24 youth that fight to the death. So in the first book, The Hunger Games, the main character is Katniss Everdeen, 16-year-old young woman from District 12, and she finds herself in a life and death struggle in the arena. Surprisingly, in the middle of this violent scenario, she becomes friends with another young woman named Rue from District 11, just the next district over. And together they concoct this plot to go and destroy the food stores of their competitors. They wonder, though, they're going to need to be separated, so how will they be able to communicate in the woods without being detected by others? Rue remembers that in the woods there are a special bird called a mockingjay. And when you whistle to them, they whistle back to you what you just whistled to them. "Just listen for the whistles," Rue tells Katniss. "And when you hear them, you'll know I'm okay, just can't make it back right now." Well, I don't want to ruin too much of the plot for you, but I'll just tell you that things don't go very well for Katniss and Rue, and Katniss has to say goodbye to Rue. In the middle of this arena situation, Katniss does this amazing thing, an unthinkable thing in the Hunger Games, and something that undermines the authority of the capital. Rather than showing violence and aggression, she shows love by burying Rue in a blanket of flowers. And then before turning to go, she turns to the ever-present cameras and she kisses her middle three fingers, and she raises them high in the air and whistles the mockingjay song. I've been practicing that all week. It's a powerful moment, and it's a moment that sparks protests in District 11. Well, as we move to the second book, the sparks of protest begin to catch fire. And as Katniss makes an all-district tour, she stops in District 11, and it's there she gives a teary-eyed speech. And she apologizes to the people of the district for being unable to save Rue. That's when this old man stands up, raises his hands in the air, and whistles the mockingjay song. It's this powerful moment of resistance that changes everything for Katniss and everything for everybody across the land. Now, the Hunger Games is just fiction. I know that. But all good fiction contains truths for us about the world we live in, and one of the truths that the Hunger Games illuminates for us is that there are forces, people, behaviors, sins and evils, powers and principalities, there are the forces of the capital that need to be resisted all the time, all around us. And where there is need for resistance, inevitably there will be those who have the courage and the willingness to be the resistor. The Hunger Games famously doesn't contain any mentions of God or of spirituality. In all three books, I don't think there's a single mention of God or a single prayer anywhere. And we're never told that the resistance movement against the Capitol has anything to do with faith. But you know, all of the resistance movements I'm familiar with, I've experienced in my life and in the world around me, almost always those resistance movements contain a personal spirituality, and often a communal faith. So I think about that old man raising his hands in District 11, knowing that it would mean his life, and I wonder, maybe you do too, I wonder what moved him to do such a thing. Was he just hungry? Was he angry? Was he frustrated? Was he sad? Probably all those things. But I think it's true that if the story was real and his story was real, that part of his resistance equation wouldn't just be anger and frustration and hunger and sadness, but it would also include a personal spirituality and a communal faith that moved him to rise up and to resist and ultimately to overcome. If we need evidence of the connection between faith and resistance, we don't need to look very far in our own world. Think about the civil rights movement, right? Think about the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. Think about the open and affirming and reconciling movements in our own partner denominations. All places where faith is at the heart of the resistance. So I've been on sabbatical for 13 weeks and been at rest. Hope you have too. But just because I've been at rest doesn't mean I've been asleep to the world around me. The world was on fire this summer, wasn't it? I mean, did you hear that Israel and Hamas were lobbing missiles back and forth and many, many died? Did you know that ISIS is rising in Iraq and Syria? And ISIS is persecuting these Yazidi people in the most violent way? That the country of Iraq is in danger of dissolving, a country that our country has spent so much time and money and blood trying to preserve. Did you hear that in Ferguson, Missouri, there was a young black man shot by a white police officer, which sparked weeks of protests and violence and a renewed debate in this country about race, about economic justice, and about white privilege? And closer to home and in your homes, did you know that there's hunger and poverty and unemployment and addiction and abuse and illness? We know that. All is not well. Things are not the way they should be. And in us and around us, there are forces pushing us down and squashing us and wounding us and killing those we love and care about. So maybe it's more comfortable on this late summer Sunday to talk about easier things. Maybe on my first Sunday back after sabbatical, I should be softer and gentler. Maybe it's safer to talk about what's right rather than what's wrong. But you see, what's become clear again to me over the past few weeks of getting some perspective, but what's become clear to me again is that following Jesus is not about comfort and softness and safety, but following Jesus is about following the one who dared say that not all is well. Following Jesus is about following the one who told us to take up our crosses. And it is about following the one who took up his own cross as an act of resistance to the powers and who was able to recreate everything for everyone with an empty tomb. So putting this all together, a pressing question for us this morning, and I think always, is this. What is the state of your Christian faith today? How is your walk following Jesus going? As you and I and we together following Jesus, are we growing not just more churchy, but are we growing deeper, more prayerful, more empathetic, more giving? Are we growing more Christ-like in such a way that we are moved to resist that which needs to be resisted, and move to recreate that which Jesus calls us to recreate? The summer's over, I'm sorry to say, just about. The sabbatical period 2014 is in the can. School has started. Labor Day is tomorrow. The Sunday school and our program year at the church here begins next week. What we have here is an amazing opportunity together to grow deeper in our own faith, more connected to one another and to our God. It's a wonderful opportunity to do that, to become more and more Christ-like, to bear the fruit more and more of resistance and recreation. We have this amazing opportunity to live like Paul calls us to live when he says, "Love should be shown without pretending. Hate evil. Hold on to what is good. Love each other like the members of your family. Be the best at showing honor to each other. Don't hesitate to be enthusiastic. Be on fire in the Spirit as you serve the Lord." Remember that when we sing later. "Be happy in your hope. Stand your ground when you're in trouble and devote yourselves to prayer. Contribute to the needs of God's people and welcome strangers into your home. Bless people who harass you. Bless and don't curse them. Be happy with those who are happy and cry with those who are crying. Consider everyone as equal and don't think you're better than anyone else." It's wonderful stuff. This call to resist and to recreate, to live like Paul calls us to live. It sounds wonderful and amazing, but when we leave those doors, we immediately know that doing those things is really hard. There's a cost to resistance and recreation and to living this alternative lifestyle that Paul maps out for us. It's hard work. So I didn't just want to preach a sermon and just like leave it there. Okay, it's hard, go do it. But see, one of the things that this community can do is help us to become more and more the people that can do these difficult things. So to help us with that, over the next few weeks, it's my plan to lead us in a sermon series and in a conversation that I hope will last a long time called Following Jesus as Resistance. And we'll learn some specific spiritual practices that we can do to help us do these things. So next week, we'll talk about following Jesus as resistance, Sabbath keeping. And then we'll do following Jesus as resistance worship and see what this setting here has to do with resistance. And then we'll end it just before Harvest Market with following Jesus as resistance serving. looking at concrete action, praxis, for helping us to be the people that Jesus calls us to be. Because, you know, the summer's over, and I hope this engaging of these topics, I hope we'll learn things, I hope we'll grow, and I hope we'll become more and more the people that resist and recreate. As the summer winds down, as sabbatical 2014 is in the can, as the world, as our community, as your homes, as your lives are on fire. Because if we don't resist and recreate, well, then who will?